Tested is sponsored by Hungry Harvest, offering farm-fresh produce delivered to your door starting at $15. Shop now with code WUNC. Every delivery supports local hunger-solving organizations. Find more at hungryharvest.net.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what today's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, the vaccine hunt. What seemed inevitable was still surprising last week when we learned that the President of the United States, a man who wouldn't wear a mask, held large rallies with packed-in crowds, and even hosted an indoor fundraiser with a buffet, was diagnosed with COVID-19.
The President of the United States now confirming to the world that he and the First Lady of the United States have both tested positive for the coronavirus, and they will quarantine. The President tweeting out just moments ago...
That sparked a weekend whirlwind of speculation, misinformation, and incredibly dangerous photo ops. It was a microcosm of the past 8 months. Science was largely ignored as narcissism and identity politics took over. But the virus won't be curbed or defeated by a preening president without a plan. It will take all of us heeding the best advice from doctors, it will take more sacrifices in our personal and professional lives, and it will take a vaccine. But what exactly is needed to create an effective and reliable vaccine still remains a big question.
We want to answer the question.
Dr. Cindy Gay is an associate professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the UNC School of Medicine. She's leading a team at UNC Chapel Hill that's conducting clinical trials on a vaccine being developed by the pharmaceutical company Moderna. UNC is one of nearly 100 sites running phase 3 of clinical trials.
Like many other people, recognize the need and the urgency to have some solutions to this pandemic. So when I was asked, it was a quick yes.
Our producer, Charlie Shelton Ormond, recently met up with Dr. Gay for a socially distanced conversation on what exactly goes into a vaccine clinical trial.
Yeah, Dr. Gay took some time out of her busy schedule to chat outside, masks on, during a sunny fall morning on UNC's campus.
Do you have a particular place you want me to sit?
Oh, I'll sit right here, and then if you just want to sit right there.
And as you said, Dave, Dr. Gay's team...
Oh, please call me Cindy.
Okay, Cindy's team is one of dozens across the country running phase 3 of clinical trials for this vaccine by Moderna. That's pretty important because phase 3 is the last step before a drug goes to the FDA to be approved. Nationally, the study hopes to have 30,000 participants, and Cindy wants her team to enroll as many as possible. Now, it would be unethical to ask anybody to expose themselves to the virus on purpose, so Cindy says they're looking for volunteers who have higher-risk jobs or living conditions, like essential workers.
We really want the participants to be at some risk for acquiring COVID, and that's not through any fault of their own, but because they have an occupation or life circumstances that just put them in close, frequent contact with others.
But she added that there are several challenges to recruiting a diverse pool of volunteers. One of them is addressing people's doubts about the safety of vaccine trials.
I think the best thing that we can do and that we try to do is just to provide information. I think it's much easier to support something if you understand it, if you have accurate information about the vaccines, that the safety steps are not being missed, what is actually being sped up, what is not. And deciding to participate in a research study is a very personal decision, and we would never try to talk someone into it. I think our approach is just to provide information. I mean, obviously there are some risks with participating in any study, and again, the information we would want to provide is what are those risks, what are the likelihood, and are the risks severe ones or mild ones, etc.
Cindy is an infectious disease physician. Her expertise is in HIV research. And turns out, there's a good amount of overlap between tackling HIV and COVID-19.
Yeah, there's quite a lot. I mean, they're both pandemics. We're definitely at a different stage of the two pandemics, meaning 30 plus years into the HIV pandemic and I would say with both, there is definitely an appreciation on my part and the team's part with the lack of knowledge and information, some anxiety within the community about how to address it, how to cope with it, how to be sensitive to some of the other issues that come with both. With both, we've certainly learned and recognized that some communities are being harder hit than others. And with the COVID pandemic, that's the African American community, the Latino community, the elderly community. And whenever you're sort of focusing on different groups within a community, you need to do that in a very sensitive, respectful way so that they understand why. And you have to listen and understand what their perspective is, both how they think about the pandemic, how they would address it, how they would even think about participating in research or supporting it. So there's a lot of overlap in that sense between the two. And I think that comes with any unknown and anything that creates uncertainty and anxiety around your health or the health of your family, the health of your friends, your community. Those are understandable concerns.
So you mentioned certain populations that have been disproportionately affected by COVID. And so I'm wondering how you and your team are ensuring adequate representation within the vaccine trials and why that is so vital.
I think it's vital because if you have a treatment or prevention method that you think it might work, it makes the most sense. And I think we have a moral and ethical obligation to provide the opportunity to benefit from that amongst the people who are being the most impacted. That's just an ethical way to approach it. I think the other reason to do it is if you want to show something works, you're going to have enough events, right? You're going to have enough people in both the arm that gets the placebo and in the arm that gets the vaccine to be able to show a difference. And if we are going to be putting people at some, what we think is minimal risk to answer the question, again, we want to answer the question.
It seems like whether it's dealing with COVID or HIV or any other infectious disease, establishing that trust is incredibly important. And it seems like you have a specific challenge with this of establishing trust with the people that you are working with as volunteers and participants within a short period of time. And so I'm curious to hear what that experience has been like for you.
I would not say that it's been easy. I think there is a lot of understandable and valid distrust of the medical community within some of these minority communities. We understand that. I think, it's trying to provide information and not push people to enroll in the studies. I think the other is to try to highlight to some degree what really positive, well-done research has been done in the past that has impacted these communities in a positive way. There are many faculty and physicians and scientists across the university setting at UNC, but across many others in North Carolina and elsewhere that have made it a career focus for them to do and try to improve the lives of some of these minority communities who haven't really been well represented in studies to date. So we have a lot of work to do to sort of correct that on our side for sure, but we have to start somewhere. So I think the reaching out, the trying to provide information that's accurate and honest, and do it in an honest way, is the best initial approach.
Charlie, we're in some uncharted territory here when it comes to a clinical trial for a COVID vaccine. People obviously want it to work. We want to get it as quickly as we can, but we want it to be safe. So that leaves the big question. Did Dr. Gay have anything to say on what people, especially volunteers, should know about the timeline of this trial?
Yeah, she says even though the process is being sped up, no corners are being cut. And again, that ensuring patients have all the information possible is a priority. You know, there's still the requirement of informed consent, and that's a pretty lengthy process where the volunteers sit down with the physician and go over every part of the trial, and then at the end, they are free to say no after learning what is involved. And Cindy told me it's crucial for the volunteers to know there won't be any surprises along the way.
I think for the COVID vaccine studies, what I hope people will be willing to understand is that although they are happening at a pace that is different than what happened with prior to the COVID pandemic, the steps that are being accelerated, if you will, are not the safety steps. It's really not possible to get into a phase 3 study without doing the phase one and the phase two and having all the necessary folks and organizations stop and look at the data to make sure that it is safe to go to the next step. It's not those steps that are being accelerated. Certainly what is being accelerated is what the many thousands of people who would be necessary and involved with doing these large studies. They have literally been working into the nights and on weekends since the beginning of the summer, probably earlier than that. When you get a lot of people together to decide that something is really important, that you're going to prioritize it before your other work, you can get a lot done a lot faster than you would without all that support and a common goal and a common commitment.
And I can imagine that as an infectious disease physician or anybody working on these teams or this collective effort, it's nonstop during a pandemic. And so I'm wondering how you or other folks that you work with take care of yourself, take care of the mental health aspect on your own end during this time.
Well, we support each other. I would say that's one. I think I'm not so sure how well we're doing anything that would actually qualify as self-care. But I think it's important to note that for many, many physicians, it is a calling. It's not a paycheck. And so to be able to help support, address, you know, anything that's involved with the pandemic is therapeutic for us in a purposeful way, I guess. So we would rather be working the long hours and trying to contribute and solve some problems than perhaps thinking about our own well-being. And I guess we can argue about whether that's really a good or a bad thing. But I think the commitment is there, and the drive to be helpful and get us to a better place is you know, it's a real thing.
Cindy, of course, doesn't have a crystal ball and can't predict when a vaccine will be ready for the public.
I think it's going to be later than a lot of people want to lead us to believe it might be in the media and elsewhere, so we'll see.
But despite the long hours working in the clinic, away from her family, Cindy says she's been inspired by the collective of people coming together to get this trial through, from the medical staff to the trial's volunteers.
I've started to ask them how they learned about the study, and that oftentimes leads into a conversation about why that they decided to participate. And hearing those reasons why does uplift me and make me carry on, so to speak. And a lot of it's not so much for themselves, but for mostly family members, that they recognize that their parents are at risk. Others want to be able to send their kids back to school. A lot of people realize they are at risk, that they have a job that requires them to show up, and they tell me they want to help.
Dr. Cindy Gay is an associate professor in the Division of Infectious Diseases at the UNC School of Medicine. Hang tight, more in a moment.
Hi, I'm Russ Henry. I work with Dave here at WUNC. COVID-19 pretty much put a stop to the world as we know it. And while it may be the biggest news story of the year so far, it's far from the only major story we're covering at WUNC. Our team is working tirelessly to keep you updated and put headlines about public health, politics, race relations, education, and the unique culture of our state in context every single day. And we're only able to tell you these stories with your support. So if you've enjoyed this podcast or any of WUNC's other shows and content, there's a really special way to show it. Visit WUNC.org and click the little heart at the top of the page to give now. Your support as a member of WUNC is invaluable to our work and how we're able to help keep you on top of a relentless news cycle. So consider a donation after this episode ends. And as always, thanks for donating and thanks for listening.
Political upheaval wasn't just a Washington phenomenon last week. Here in North Carolina, the race for U.S. Senate took a loop-de-loop through the roller coaster. First, Republican incumbent Tom Tillis announced on Friday that he had also tested positive for COVID-19, most likely thanks to attending a White House event on Saturday while not wearing a mask. And just a few hours later, Democratic nominee Cal Cunningham admitted to sending sexually suggestive texts to a woman who isn't his wife. Oh, and whoever wins this particular race might be the tipping point seat for which party controls the U.S. Senate. WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tiberi discussed all of that on the state of things this week.
This is all happening so quickly. We're 28 days away. We're 4 weeks away from Election Day itself. Hundreds of thousands of ballots have already come in. Early voting begins next week. I would note that there was some polling done immediately after the first acknowledgement by Cunningham came over the weekend that he had these inappropriate texts with a woman who is not his wife. Some snap polling came from Public Policy Polling. That is a left-leaning polling entity, and they basically laid out that this didn't have an immediate significant impact on the race. I would note, of course, that that's a snapshot in time, and that snapshot has now since passed us. So how this plays out in the coming weeks, both how Tillis continues to attack the challenger, and we're presuming eventually how Cunningham tries to spin this, to acknowledge us and move forward. Those are going to be key elements, but at this point, we have not heard from the Democratic candidate.
You can hear more from Jeff about the latest on North Carolina politics on the WUNC Politics Podcast. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Charlie Shelton-Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster-Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.